Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, should there be another Leveson inquiry into covering Islam in the press?
In July 2011, following the News International phone hacking scandal, David Cameron appointed Lord Justice Leveson as chairman of a public inquiry under the Inquiries Act of 2005. This public inquiry intends to address the culture, practices, and ethics of the press and the media, as well as the extent of their unlawful conduct. Now, an Islamic TV channel is planning to run an alternative Leveson inquiry to investigate the way in which Muslims and Islamic affairs are reported in the British media. The Islamic channel advocates a public inquiry and independent panel, similar to the Leveson inquiry. The inquiry would examine the link between the British media coverage and the social attitude towards Muslims. It would follow the public poll done last summer, where 29% of people blame the media for Islamophobia and creating a climate of fear against Muslims. This week's Islam and Life asks, should there be another Leveson inquiry into covering Islam in the press?
These are important questions if we look at the situation in Europe, in the West. In fact, throughout the world, the perception of Islam, and especially in the West, is quite negative. It's negative, and we are coming back to facts and talking about terrorists, talking about September 11, talking about what happened in London in 2005 or in Madrid 2004. But in fact, the problem is deeper than that, because if we look at the coverage that we have within the media, mainly it's negative, and it's day in, day out that we see, hear coverage about Muslims and about Islam that are negative as to the substance of the religion and negative as the Muslim presence in the West. And if you look at what is happening in our societies, it's quite clear that there is an impact between the media coverage and the perceptions and the reactions of the people, our fellow citizens in Europe. A recent Cambridge research on this was just showing that one out of three people are connecting the media coverage with the negative perception of Islam and Muslims in Britain. And it's the same even in France. 75% of the French people are connecting Islam with violence, and this is coming from the coverage and the media and what is said about Islam and what is said about Muslims. So we need to come to this and maybe come back to the inquiry and try to understand the journalist's responsibility when it comes to covering Islam and the Muslims, and not to connect Islam to violence and Muslims to alien realities of foreigners or immigrants, as if they were not Europeans, as if they were not Western, as if Islam was alien to the Western culture even. So these are critical questions, and to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Ahmad Thompson, barrister, author, and a founding member of the Association of Muslim Lawyers. Thank you so much for being with us. You have been following this, you have been also reacting to what was said about the reality of the media coverage in this country, and saying there is something wrong in the whole process. We need really to react, because we can just face the fear of the people on the ground, but at the end we need to go to the causes, and one of the causes is the media and the media coverage. So what is the state of affairs today? How do you feel, how do you see the situation? Tony Blair said a few years ago the rules of the games have changed, speaking about politics, but at the end of the day, before even politics upstream, we are facing the media. What would you say about the state of affairs?
Well, certainly in the time that I've been a Muslim, which is sort of coming up for about 40 years now, I have seen a marked change in the way that Islam and Muslims are covered in the press. And especially really in the last 15 years, that the kind of tone has changed, the kind of targeting of people has changed. I've seen you targeted. I've seen really anyone who might emerge as a leader being targeted and being attacked in the media, and things which are blatantly not true being said about them, probably in the hope that they haven't got the time or the money to bring defamation action in the court. And so it's almost become accepted that this is a practice which is acceptable. And if you compare it to, example, the treatment of the Irish when the problems in Ireland and Northern Ireland were much more marked, you never found the whole Irish race or all the Roman Catholic people from Ireland or all the Protestant people from Ireland being targeted by the press in the same way. They did really, the coverage was concerned with the people who were blowing up, committing acts of terrorism. Whereas now it's a much more blanket approach. And I think therefore, and obviously we can go into this in further detail, but I think there is a need for to look at the practices of the media and to see whether they can be improved. I mean, I have come across journalists with great integrity. For example, Dominic Kennedy of the Times. He is a man of integrity. If you look at some of the tabloid press, they're far from that.
So it's quite important what you are saying, because very often we say, oh, all the media and all the journalists, and still we have journalists that are struggling from within their staff, within the system, to try to change the picture. Mm-hmm. And very often when we meet with them, they are saying, difficult for me just to change the perception, because the problem is not only the perception of the people who are reading, is the perception or the ideology of the people who are the owner of the media, who are writing, the journalists themselves. If now we have to just to try to say, okay, we need a new inquiry, for example, about what the media practice, looking for what exactly?
I think first of all, let's just look at the Leveson inquiry, because it is possible that in fact it will look at this issue. As I understand it, it's divided into four segments. And the first is concerned with phone hacking, especially celebrities. It's obviously not looking at phone hacking by the intelligence services, which is much more widespread and often focusing on Muslims, but that's another subject. Then there is the connection between the police and the media, because often leaks come from the police, whether it's for money or not is another question, but the leaks come through the police, matters they're investigating, and it comes out to the media, and then you get the article. So that's another area. Then they're looking at the relationship between politicians and the media, because basically the media is so powerful now, it can either make or break a politician. Often if the main papers decide to back a certain politician, you can almost assure that he will be elected. And then finally, the last section of the Leveson inquiry is going to be concerned with other submissions that people make. And as I understand it, submissions will be made to the Leveson inquiry that they should look into the coverage of Islam and the Muslims and other minority groups, probably.
So it can be integrated into.
So it could still come within that umbrella. But if it isn't, and I suppose often the feeling is, well, it probably won't be. Then there is a need for an alternative Leveson inquiry.
So a need for what exactly? Well, if you think about the state of affairs now, what you are saying is that it's worse than before. The situation is quite worrying. What are the main fields, the main sectors? What are the main challenges or problems that the Muslims are facing in the media? What are the problems? So you have just to
Well, I think often they're just false stereotypes. I mean, I can think of one case where I have direct experience, where I was representing a bookshop that was attacked in the media. It was shortly after the 7/7 bombings. And I understand that Tony Blair had said to the press, you know, the Muslims are fair game, let them have it. Because there was this kind of emotional reaction that somehow everyone was to blame for it. And this bookshop was accused of promoting jihad and inciting terrorism. And it had photographs of books that, in fact, it wasn't selling. And one of the photographs was actually of a video called, I think, Jihad and Terrorism, where, in fact, the speaker was speaking out against terrorism. But in the way that it was put, it seemed like he was promoting it. So there were blatant lies. And because... as is often the case, the bookshop did not have a lot of funds available.
So this is a case where it's quite clear.
We went to the Press Complaints Commission, and the complaint was upheld. And as a result of that, I was attacked in the press very shortly afterwards, okay, from the same offices as the Evening Standard, you know, in the Mail on Sunday. Hmm. So one saw this kind of connection very blatantly. And again, things which were said about me, which were simply not true. You know, words were attributed to me that I'd never uttered by people who'd never even met me.
So these are it's not only bad practices.
In that context, I could say that this is why I mentioned Dominic Kennedy, because you know, several other papers jumped on the bandwagon and also attacked me, Telegraph especially, whereas Dominic Kennedy actually bothered to get in touch with me and asked me a few questions, and I answered them. Okay. And as a result, there was no negative coverage in the Times. Mm-hmm. You know, so this was just one very isolated example.
So you have journalists who have ethical concerns and others who are forgetting and just ready to lie. Still, sometimes, and this is why I think it's quite important, sometimes the message is more subtle, is negative without lie. So do you have, would you say that here we have to do something? Because
I mean, I heard again through the grapevine probably 2 or 3 years ago now, but someone had proposed a program to be broadcast by BBC, and they said, oh, we're not ready yet to broadcast a positive program on Muslims in Islam. You know, we can only, in other words, we can only do negative stuff. The public, the general public, aren't ready for a positive program. So this almost indicates an underlying policy, if not in writing, understood. I wouldn't call it a gentleman's agreement, but certainly an agreement that Islam and Muslims can be covered in a negative way with negative stereotypes, making negative associations, tarring with the same brush and the same coverage people who are very extreme and really nothing to do with Islam, although they may be called Muslims and have Muslim names, but saying, you know, that there's moderates and there's terrorists, and in fact all the moderates are terrorists. That's the kind of holiday logic.
But you said an agreement between whom and whom?
Well, I think just within the media. You know, there is obviously, there's interlink, you know, there's interlink. It's not that everyone's an island, you know, there is interlink.
Okay, you know, I was myself involved, as you were saying, involved in many of these discussions with journalists, and it was very negative, and they can, make you and break you as much as they want, and sometimes they are very happy because you are the right person at the right place, and sometimes you are exactly the opposite because what they want is exactly the opposite message. That's all true. Now, what I also heard by journalists that I can trust, you know, we are mentioning Kennedy, but we have others throughout the world.
Well, I think on The Guardian as well, there's
lots of people who are trying their best. Now, some of them, and it's also true that we when you see what is happening in the press or in the TVs and TV programs, they are saying after what happened in the States, what happened in London or in Madrid and around the world, now what we have is journalists that had first to know more about Islam, to study more, to be quite clear about the terminology, the definitions of words that they are using, and sometimes they are very cautious. Can you, because you are saying over the last 15 years is worse, it's not going the right direction, and then I got some journalists that I can trust saying, no, now we have people knowing more about Islam. It's the counter effect that people wanted to spread around fear, and now we have journalists that are more equipped. What is your assessment on this?
Well, I think in a way at this point we almost need to step back and look at this discussion in a historical context. Because if you look at what has been happening in the world, say in the last 25 years, or say the last 30 years, I have seen. I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands. It's probably more than a couple of million civilian Muslims have been killed, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's in Afghanistan, whether it's in Palestine, whether it's in Kashmir, whether it's in Chechnya and southern Russia, systematically slaughtered. And of course, they say, well, no, this isn't terrorism because it's being done by the state, and terrorism can only be committed by an individual. But really, this is playing with words, because what is the state? You can't meet the state. The state is the word that's used for the individuals who run the show. And often it's not the politicians. So, you know, it's by an unelected elite, you could say, who actually call the shots. And they are very closely connected to the financial elite, the people who run the financial systems. And so one sees a kind of policy that is very anti-Islam and anti-Muslim. And if you look at the fall of the Ottoman Caliphate and how that was brought about and of the slaughter that followed in its wake, there's a very good analysis of it, referring back to official documentation, you know, the Lausanne treaties, this sort of thing, by Sheikh Abdelkader, Dr. Sufi, it's on YouTube, where he says, hang on, you know, this alleged genocide of the Armenians, what actually happened when the Ottoman Caliphate was being carved up? What were the Russian soldiers doing when they came into Muslim territory, previous Muslim territory? What were the French forces doing? What were the Armenian forces doing? And you find there the figure of, according to the official figures, 6 or 7 million Muslims being slaughtered as part of this shift of power. And part
the
of
end, Ottoman Empire.
So and then you look at the whole European colonial era, and you see the same story being repeated again and again throughout the Muslim world until we are in the situation we have today, where the whole world is carved up.
What is the relationship between this and the media
coverage?
So
therefore, that kind of political backdrop means that the coverage of it by the media says this is okay. Just in the same way that the media coverage of the colonial period says, yeah, we're coming to, educate these ignorant savages.
But this is the point. You know, when I listen to you, I say, okay, it's the fourth power. It's very powerful. The media are powerful now. We have the traditional media. We have alternative media. We have internet. And this is not free, and this is not ideologically free. It's working for the powerful and working for people who might have an agenda, and we will be naive to think the opposite. Having said that, and knowing what you are saying, is the coverage of what happened when our people are killed is a big issue. When the others are killed, it's just normal.
Especially non-combatants. I'm not talking about people who are defending their territory.
Non-combatants, and millions of people have been slaughtered. Now, having said that, now when we know that the most powerful medias are mainly coming from the West, what should be the reaction? We can go for other inquiries or ask things to be added to the current inquiry, Levinson and others, and having university doing this in order to change the perceptions.
The thing is that, you know, the Prophet Muhammad, blessings and peace be on him, said that the greatest jihad is to speak the truth in the court of a tyrant.
Exactly, yeah.
And this whole Levinson inquiry is about standards, principles, ethics, being truthful, being balanced, being objective. And in a way, all we're saying is, well, if you're going to apply these principles, please also apply them when you're reporting on the Muslims and Islam. Don't have double standards.
Okay, so this is the starting point.
But you have to bear in mind that the very person who called the Levinson inquiry is also very much a part of the Prevent Islam strategy. I mean, I know it's called Prevent, but when you read between the lines, it's Prevent Islam, you know, redefine Islam, make it another state religion, don't mention the word Sharia, don't mention the word Caliph. It's right to mention President of the United States, President of the European Union, but that the Muslims should have a leader is you know, below the pale, beyond the pale. So you see already double standards in the person calling this inquiry and carrying on really the example of the government before him and the government before that. It's been a long-standing official governmental position, you could say. But all we can say in this situation is, hang on a minute, you know, we are human beings. We are not what you say we are. Just try and be a bit more human. Just try and actually meet Muslims. And so often I have met people who say, you're not like the people we read about in the papers or that we see portrayed on the television. You know, you're actually quite nice, you know. And I say, well, you know, there it is, you know, look what happens when you meet real Muslims. And this is why part of that story is that Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world today, especially in America, especially in Europe, especially in England, even in France, despite everything they've done to try and stop it happening. And one sees actually underlying it again, because we have to look under the surface, that underlying this approach is actually a strategy to secularize all the legal systems in the world. It's got to the point where it's even been ruled that it's illegal for a council to say prayers, asking God to guide them before they deliberate their affairs. Yeah. You know, in Bedford just the other day. So this shows that although the pronouncements on human rights says, yes, you have Article 9 rights and you have freedom of belief and freedom to express your belief, whether alone or together, in fact, these very same laws are used to curtail religious rights, even on a very basic level.
This
no,
is
you
exactly
can't wear a cross. No, you can't say prayers.
This is exactly my point, because when I'm listening to you, this is all happening throughout the Western world with Western Muslims. In the United States, they are facing discourse, the Tea Parties, and now the elections are coming. It's going to be the same. In Europe, we have the populists. And now the media, it's a vicious circle. The media say, oh, we are against the populists, but they give them the floor because they are making, they are targeting audiences, and it's a question of money, because at the end of the day, media is business. So you will get the it's trying to get the audiences and getting the people watching TV. If we want to avoid now something which is to be passive and to say, okay, look, we are human beings, because at the end, what you are saying is that our fellow citizens, they are not completely naive. They understand that there is something wrong. They don't trust the media. It's not only they don't trust the media when we speak about, what is happening around the world, the politicians. They don't trust politicians. They don't trust what is said. So there is mistrust, and then they are meeting other Muslims and say, oh, hang on, there is something wrong in the whole business. The perception is not what I see. And then some are interested by Islam, some are interested to meet Muslims. So we are in a state of tensions in between these two realities. What should be our role?
I think in a way we have to call people to worship Allah, which is after all is what we're created to do, in the best way. It says, call to people in the best way and remind them in the best way. Not with anger, but with knowledge and with wisdom. And what often reassures me is the saying of the Prophet Muhammad, blessings and peace be on him, that he said Allah uses the enemies of Islam to spread the deen of Islam. And one sees that the more they try and stamp it out, the more it grows, in fact. And I think if you step back, looking at it from a Quranic perspective, which I found always to be very accurate, because it is authored, if you like, by the one who's authored the whole of creation. And if God doesn't understand creation, who does? Who doesn't? Basically, there are two kinds of people: the people who accept, the people who reject. At the moment, the media is largely in the hands of the people who reject. But whatever they try, in the end, it won't work.
Thank you so much. I think that it was quite important to listen to what you have to say about first the evolution, and it's quite worrying to see how much the covering Islam is negative. But at the same time, as you were saying, we are facing a state where non-Muslims and people of other faiths in our societies are interested. So this is something which is still, we should remain positive. And as you said as well, step back and be wise with the whole process. Even though you also said this and you were signing a petition to try to change the perception, is not to remain passive, to be active in the process of changing the perception. What we can do is at least to do this and to be involved. Yes. One day we'll have Muslim journalists, and we are not asking them to portray the Muslims in a positive but a more accurate, a fairest way. This is something that could be the future as well, as something which is part of the process, and asking for a new inquiry by saying journalists at the end of the day are citizens and they have a civil responsibility. If they work for peace, at least to portray their fellow citizens, the Muslims, in the right way. We are not asking for being positive, we are just asking them to be a bit objective in what they have to do. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
Islam in Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticisms on any of the shows you have seen or would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islaminlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life, on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debates, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Ahmed Thompson. Thank you so much for your input and your experience and your advice for the Muslim just to be involved in the process. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.